It's 8:09 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. In the studio with me now, Cheryl Fox from Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see. Let's talk first. You've got folks checking the hops all around town, and looks like you're about ready to harvest those shortly.
Well, probably towards the end of this month or early September. Sunday was our final hops hike of the season. So as you know, we go out every other Sunday, take a group of people and look at various hops populations that are growing wild in our open spaces. And they found that the cones were growing and the plants look healthy. So we are looking forward to a good harvest. And so what happens now is we wait until the brewer actually at Wasatch, at the Wasatch Brewing, says now is the time. And so they generally go out and they look at the hops and they look at the way they're developing, because there is really a time when the pollen is right and the hops are rightly are properly ripened. So we kind of have to wait until the last minute, and there's always a little bit of a dance. Is it going to get too cold? Is it going to freeze? One year we waited a little too long and everything froze, and so then that was the year we had the no hops, clothing optional. But anyway, we've gotten a little bit more savvy about it now, and so what we do is ask people if they want to participate in the harvest. They should probably go to our website, which is wesaveland.org. There's a lot of happenings tab on the homepage, and they can sign up to be on the email, so that when the day comes, and it's usually a weekday, and we usually meet early, 7:30 in the morning out in front of the Wasatch Brew Pub on Main Street, then we'll take people up to these various hops populations and we harvest them, which means you go up with gloves and we cut these big long, you know, vine, they're not vines, they're vines with a B, and we bring those all down back again to the Wasatch Brew Pub, and then we sit out in the back in Sweet Alley, and it's kind of a long process because you have to pull the cones off of the vines. It's a, you know, really it is a handcrafted beer. And then when we get these big vats full of the cones, they go right then into the brew, and they make the beer right there. So that's why it has to be a weekday, so that it can be brewed by the brewers. And the result is what we call clothing optional, and that will be available at the Wasatch Brew Pub on tap usually by the end of September usually, or early October. And then we will also host, sponsored by Wasatch Brew Pub, a hoppy hour where people can come and taste the beer. And it's really very good. It's always very good. It's always a little bit different depending on what the hops do and the recipe that they put together. We're really grateful for the Wasatch Brew Pub for sponsoring this for us. This is the fifth or sixth year that we've been doing it now. And it's really fun. It's really popular.
So have you planted some of the hops, or are these just all naturally growing?
Most of these are naturally growing. In order to boost our harvest, we have sometimes taken hops from other places where they have planted them. Bill White Farms has a bunch of hops out along the fence line out there, so we've taken those. Sometimes people will bring them from yards and gardens and places where they have them. So last year of an organic farm down in Salt Lake brought a whole bunch up to help, you know, and we still have to sit there and hand harvest them, hand pluck them. So, but it's fun, you know, we sit around and there is, samples, adult beverages, sometimes earlier in the morning than some of us want them, but that's okay.
Okay. So again, best thing to do is just go online and that way you'll be notified.
Go online and sign up so that, yeah, you'll be notified.
Okay, coming up later this month, you've got the Blue Sky Bash. You do have a few tickets left?
Just a few tickets left. Yeah, we are almost all sold out, maybe, you know, 10, 15 seats left. That is August 24th at the beautiful Blue Sky Ranch out in Wanship. We do provide a free shuttle, both to and from the event, so people can get out there and not worry about how much whiskey they're drinking. It's a great event. It's mostly about whiskey and open space. We have partnered with our friends at Hawkwatch International, and they will bring some raptors. So during the cocktail hour, people can go up and meet these wonderful, beautiful birds. That's sponsored by I Care for Animals. We're really grateful for that. And there are also squirt guns. So I suggest that people wear clothes that can have a little squirt on them.
Okay. Let's see. You're also working on a couple of more easements, conservation easements. Where are these going to be?
That's right. So these are the two that we are, two more conservation easements that we're working on in eastern Summit County. One is up Chalk Creek outside of Colville. It's a little over 800 acres. And again, we're just waiting for the final release of funds from the federal government. The other is 90 acres in Hennifer. And again, we are also waiting for the final release of funds from the federal government. And so they, both of those should close soon. The one in Chalk Creek we've been waiting for, you know, for 2 months now, so any day. And, you know, it's pretty exciting. That's another 900, almost another 1,000 acres protected. The one in Hennifer is, will create a 220-acre swath of open space along the Weber River there, in that community. And so, and the other one is sagegrass habitat. So we're kind of excited about these. You know, sometimes they're a little farther afield, a little bit out of the, or people don't realize that they see in them. I think that often happens with open space. People, you know, you kind of look past it or you think, oh, that's just open space. And you don't realize that it wasn't protected by accident and it wasn't protected by free. So, you know, when people support the Summit Land Conservancy, when they come to the Blue Sky Bash, when they donate during Live PC, Give PC, that's what makes this conservation happen.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, I know that it's been a beautiful, cool summer. I hope people are enjoying the trails and the open spaces.
Okay. Any update with regard to the new headquarters?
You know, we're in the design phase right now. We're starting to put some things together on paper to see what it might look like. And I don't think we have anything new to talk about just yet. Maybe next month.
Yeah. I mean, do you have an answer from the city in terms of, yes, you can use that?
Not officially.
Yeah, they want to see drawings and things like that?
I think they want a little more information. And frankly, I think our organizations need a little more information as well. Because, you know, it's a two-step process. It's what they might be able to provide, what we feel comfortable taking on going forward. So there's some discussions that still are in process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cheryl Fox is the Executive Director of Summit Land Conservancy. Thanks.
Thank you.
8:17, good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meets at 1:30 tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville in the studio with a preview of the meeting. I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you mentioned that you do have an agenda item that's getting changed.
Yeah, so right at the beginning of the agenda, we're going to amend it this morning. To include a 20-minute discussion by the council, an update from Pat Putt, and then a discussion about the proposed hideout annexation declaration boundary change. We've had a little bit of input into that based on a letter that I sent to the hideout town council and planning commission. The council, there's been some changes to their proposal, and the council would like to bring a little public light to that this week. So they're going to put that on the agenda and have a small discussion.
Okay, the changes are what?
From what we saw from the changes, I'd prefer that people go to the hideout page and find out specifically, but they did seem to change some of the boundary to not include, and I emphasize not include, the Clark Ranch that Park City owns, as well as the OU1 or Richardson Flat soils repository. I don't know the extent of any other changes, but we've been to some of their meetings, and there's some property owners or developments within Summit County that might be asking to be part of the annexation too. So we want to have a pretty thorough discussion about that as much as we can, in order to start thinking about that and make sure that we're projecting what the county's attitude is towards that.
Okay, so they're still, Hideout is still scheduled, though, to adopt this. I think it's Thursday.
They are, but at the same time, you know, their planning commission, I don't believe, forwarded a recommendation, so they might take another week to do that, or a week or two, not really sure. We're still planning on having a meeting between some council members of the two counties and Park City and Hideout. I believe we're shooting for the 19th of the month to do that. But a lot is happening pretty fast with this, and we just want to make sure that Summit County's voice is heard in this process.
Yeah. Does it really matter, though? Because what I'm hearing is that you can put whatever you want in your policy plan. It doesn't, and they can overlap, and what's
yeah,
I think it
matters from the standpoint of what is being projected as far as you know. We certainly have our general plans that make plans for that for those areas that are in Summit County, and you know, if others' plans are contradictory to that, we're sending different messages to future development, and you know, then you start to possibly pit different governments against each other, and property owners against governments, and it could get fairly messy very quickly. So I think that's the reason why we need to be talking to each other.
Okay, so that'll start right after you get out of closed session then?
That's correct.
All right, which is about 1:30, 1:40.
That is correct.
The Summit County Council will also be reintroduced to the Fair Rodeo and Royalty. Also, the Eagle Scout has a flag disposal project. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, just this young man, Tanner Crosby, brought forward a project for his Eagle badge, this was to place a box at the Kimball Junction Library or Richens Building, as we call it, that would allow people to deposit flags that have reached their useful life, and then the scouts will dispose of those as they're properly done. So they run a program like this every year, the scouts do in Utah, this will just be one of those collection points. So this is what he's doing for his Eagle project.
Okay, well, good for him. And on some of the social media sites, I mean, people are just taking down businesses for their ragged flags that they continue to hang. I mean, I guess it's maybe what we need is new flags.
Well,
available.
maybe it's a re-education by some groups of what the proper way it is to treat a flag, and there is a proper way. So. Not that that's near and dear to my heart at all from my military background at all.
Yeah. Looks like there could be some major news on renewable energy goals. The county's goal was to have net 100% renewable for government operations by 2032. There is a draft renewable energy service contract as part of the agenda after doing a request for proposal. So reportedly this could get you to the goal nearly 10 years early?
Yeah, this is kind of a next step in that. So the council set a goal of 2032 as being the year that they would desire for staff to get all of government operations for Summit County under renewable energy production. We've been working with Rocky Mountain Power, Park City, Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, and then some other entities like Vail and Deer Valley, Utah Valley University, are all working together with Rocky Mountain Power to put together a large bulk purchase of renewable energy that would service all of those entities and their electricity needs. So this is the next step in that. Rocky Mountain Power has gone through an RFP process to procure that power. Agreeing to this step means that Rocky Mountain Power can then put forth a plan to the Public Service Commission about how this would all work, what the rates would be, and make that agreement with the Public Service Commission on how that would all work. So I don't think that we're going to get 100% of the answers going into this next step, but we're getting a lot of the answers. And unfortunately, it's kind of a quick turnaround to get this done. There's some deadlines that have to be met in order to take advantage of the pricing that's available right now. So that's what's being put in front of all of these entities at this point.
So Rocky Mountain Power is the renewable provider?
Well, they will be contracting to have a renewable energy built. I'm sure it will be some kind of, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that it'll be some kind of lease situation that they'll be working with a third-party vendor to actually do that, just as they did with their some of their Blue Sky programs.
Right. So, I mean, are we talking about building a new solar farm or a wind farm or something like that?
I don't know the specifics of what was in the proposal that was accepted. As far as what is renewable, I'm guessing that I believe that the solar production was more favorable pricing wise than wind. So I'm guessing it's a large solar project.
So again, I mean, if this works, then the county would have net zero carbon emissions by January 1st of 2023.
Yeah, if as long as it's all lined up and makes that goal, but that's what they're shooting for right now.
And then what about the communities portion? Because wasn't that?
Yeah, that's kind of on a separate track. Of course, we were working on the legislation this last legislative session in order to even allow us to work with Rocky Mountain Power and the Public Service Commission in order to make that possibility. That's still going through its process in order to figure out exactly how that would be done. It hasn't even gotten to a point where it would be negotiating with the Public Service Commission on rates and rate schedules and all those types of things.
Park City School District will be presenting their master plan options. Is this just a presentation, or are they asking council for something?
I think they're just informing. It's a public venue. They're informing the council. I believe they're going to be talking to the Park City Council this week about that as well. So it's just a public, a more public presentation of what they've been working on.
All right. The Snyderville Rec District is going to be purchasing the what's known as the Triangle Parcel from Summit County. Council is being asked to approve this as the governing board for the Rec District as well as the County Council. So what's the Rec District going to do with the property?
So the Rec District already owns a 50% interest in the Triangle Parcel. They are the ones that actually purchased that from Park City a few years ago as part of a as part of financial contribution to the Bonanza Flat purchase. So the county owned the other 50% interest and had purchased that with non-open space funds. So this would use open space funds to purchase the county's interest in that so that it's wholly owned by the rec district and then will be open space because of the types of money that was used on it.
So it's just really accounting.
It's accounting on a lot of different levels. It's both asset accounting, and actual type of money accounting as well.
Yeah. So why is this happening now?
It has to happen now in order to. It's kind of a precursor to the rec district's purchase of the Gilmore property, and it's part of the accounting of how in the Gilmore purchase, there's a portion of it that is developable, and then there's the larger portion of it that would be open space.
All right. Let's see. A special exception request for Blue Sky Ranch. Staff is recommending a bypass road. How come?
Well, this has been in front of the Planning Commission and the Council already. They would like an emergency access that bypasses kind of the distillery area of Blue Sky Ranch in order to have an alternate egress, probably a more of a delivery egress for the ranch. That's my understanding of the project, and that's what's being proposed.
So some concern that we may see some scars?
Yeah, I mean, this certainly digs into the hill a little bit in order to provide the space in order to put a road. I think the council was also concerned about some of the grades, and they wanted to hear from the fire district and emergency providers in order to understand whether the vehicles that the fire district has can handle those grades.
Okay. Then at 5 o'clock, a public hearing of some changes to the East County Planning Code on wastewater systems. What will these do?
Well, the Eastern Summit County Water Conservancy Special Service District, that's a lot to say, but essentially a sewer district for the East County. It has been in existence for quite a long time. With the new code in place, with master plan developments available, with village overlays available, it's time for us to really bring this entity into fruition. What this change would do is essentially makes it more than just a review body for development on the east side of the county in the unincorporated county. Now that they are, they would be an official sign-off for that development. So they'd sign plats. They'd sign off on the process before it goes into the Planning Commission. So just brings more scrutiny to wastewater development in regards to residential and commercial development. So we're putting that in place, and the next steps around that are going to be even bigger with how does this district function in the future with eventually staff and boards and other types of activities that they'll have to do to protect ground water sources.
Okay, and so this would span which communities this district would oversee?
Well, it's the whole unincorporated east part of the county. So essentially the same planning area that code covers.
All right. Let's see. Then finally, some awards for agricultural preservation will be made to the Richens Family Homestead. This is in Echo Canyon, and then the Double Diamond Ranch near Marion?
That's correct. The Extension Service brings these forward each year after a review process, and we had a couple last year that were recognized in the same way, and I think we're going to have more coming. It seems to be a popular thing, and it's good to recognize these heritage farms.
All right. Wanted to ask you, when will the council get to a decision about the entry gate at the trails at Jeremy Ranch?
I have looked at the next 3 weeks of agendas, and I know it's on one of those, so I know it's coming soon, so I would stay tuned on that.
All right. And any reaction to Promontory dropping its proposal for the Pinnacle?
It certainly was discussed as part of the meeting last week that they had that option. It didn't look like they were going to take that option at the meeting. But as they regrouped after that meeting, they seemed to make that decision. We'll see what happens, whether something else comes back or they move forward with what they've got.
So what does that mean now for the affordable housing that Promontory has to develop?
They have the same agreement, that came under their last, development of the Nicholas Clubhouse, and that discussion. That agreement still stands.
So what, we're talking like 30, 35 units or something?
Yeah, it's that 35 units. They have to produce so many of them within the next 18 months and then the further obligation.
Okay. And also you said you didn't, or you weren't aware of the order of Francis?
No, I'm certainly aware of it, of the order in Francis to curtail use of secondary water. But I haven't heard an update this morning on where that's at.
Okay. Tom, thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Unless you had something else.
No, sorry. That's it. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Well, as we've reported, Heber Light and Power is considering buying into a nuclear power plant that will be built in Idaho. But Gila, Utah thinks that might be a bad idea and has called a community meeting tomorrow to talk about why. On the phone, I have a grassroots organizer for Gila, Utah, Noah Materko. Good morning to you, Noah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Leslie.
Yeah, so first, when and where will this meeting be held?
So the event is tomorrow, August 7th at 6:30 p.m. at the Heber Police Department in the public room over there.
Okay. And why is Gila, Utah coming out against this proposal?
So Gila, Utah, we were founded as a radioactive waste organization. We've always been a public health watchdog. And what we see with this project is a continuation of a terrible nuclear legacy in Utah and throughout the West. This project will produce a huge amount of high-level waste, which is our main concern, and also it looks to be incredibly expensive for ratepayers. So we want to make sure that Heber Light and Power ratepayers aren't paying more than they have to, and you know, we would love to see the utility and others invest in affordable renewable energy that's available now rather than continuing this nuclear legacy.
Yeah, and I guess there's many who would disagree with you, know, that we're well past the days of the China syndrome. And, you know, you look at Europe, they have nearly 200 nuclear power plants. In France, more than 75% of their electricity is supplied by nuclear energy. So they have figured out that it is somewhat safe and affordable. So why are you telling me that that's not the case?
Well, that's sort of the case. In United States, the so-called nuclear renaissance over the past several decades, we've seen a lot of new plants attempt to be built, but really only two new nuclear power plants built over the past few decades. And the vast majority have come with huge cost overruns, and a lot of them haven't even been constructed at all. So, for instance, ratepayers in South Carolina will end up owing more than $6,000 to be paid in monthly installments for the next four decades for a nuclear power project. So this is money that they're on the hook for never seeing a single kilowatt of this power. And just this year, the Department of Energy gave $3.7 billion in taxpayer money to bail out the ailing Southern Company's nuclear power project near Waynesboro, Georgia. So we haven't seen this nuclear renaissance in the United States, mostly because it is so expensive and we don't have a solution to the waste. We can't recycle the waste in the United States in the similar ways that they can in Europe, mostly for national security concerns. And the problems that exist in Europe would exist over here, too. When it gets too hot, they have to shut those down. They use huge amounts of water, and this is a very water-sensitive area. The Idaho National Lab is on the Snake River aquifer, and this would take huge amounts of water for that, and then that goes to affect everybody downstream in communities like northern Utah.
Yeah, and Heber Light and Power, just talking about paying into having this plant built, it, as you mentioned, out of state, so it's not like they want to build it on the Provo River.
No, that's true.
So they really don't have any risk, or are you saying once they buy into it, they do assume the risk?
They do have the risk. Once they sign the power purchase agreement, there is not a lot of protections in place to protect ratepayers. At this current time, UAMPS is saying that per kilowatt hour, this would cost about $65, which is already more than 40% more expensive than what we would see from a traditional comparable renewable portfolio, which is already available. So already it's more expensive, and this, we're not seeing a cost-competitive process that we're going through. We're seeing that we could sign on for more expensive power without evaluating all other options. So already there's that risk for ratepayers, and again, that's ratepayer money and taxpayer money. So if you think about it, you're paying for it twice. And Heber Light and Power doesn't have to go through really rigorous and strict regulations like the Public Service Commission. They are the consumer advocate. They are the decision makers. And we just don't think they necessarily have the resources or the skills to make this decision on a whim. And we want to make sure that they're taking it seriously and conducting a cost-competitive study that's non-biased and that evaluates other available power.
Yeah, so, I mean, you say you're advocating for renewable energies, but our landscape can't, I mean, it can't all be windmills and solar panels, or is that what you're advocating?
You know, we have a lot of solar here in Utah, and we have a lot of solar capability here in Utah, and we have a lot of open land, and we have a lot of rangeland that would be great for wind as well, so we're nowhere near the penetration rate where we would have to be concerned about our entire landscape being taken up with solar panels or wind.
So at tomorrow's meeting, then, are you looking for community support then to what, help fight this proposal? Or?
Well, you know, we'd really just like to have a discussion about the project, about what people's concerns are, about what our concerns are. We hope to encourage a deep discussion regarding the community thoughts and addressing energy alternative power sources for the future. We know the Heber Valley has a lot of smart people in there, a lot of people who are concerned about our energy future, and we want them to have their voice as well.
Okay, so if people are interested, again, tomorrow, 6:30 at the Heber Police Station Public Safety Building there?
That's correct.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it. I appreciate you having me on this morning.
Okay, that's Noah Materko with Heal Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Coming up Tuesday, August 13th, the Park City Institute presents three critically acclaimed and award-winning musical acts in one night: the Taj Mahal Quartet, Mark Cohn, and the Blind Boys of Alabama. One of the acts, Mark Cohn, joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was wondering if this was going to be three separate acts until I read the website that you're scheduled to release a new album with the Blind Boys of Alabama just days before the show, and that you guys have been performing together for more than a year now.
That's right. Almost 2 years, I think, on and off, dozens of shows. It's been an amazing experience for me. But yes, our part of the show is about 90% collaborative. We're on stage together for almost the entire set.
Okay, so talk a little bit about that partnership. How did that come to be?
I was asked to write some songs for them. They were making a new record, and it was somebody's concept, I think their manager, who wanted to have some songwriters write songs based on the Blind Boys' lives, which were and have been very difficult, traumatic, inspirational, and wonderful in many ways, too. But he wanted not only for us to write songs that would fit their voices, but that would tell their own narratives and stories. So he sent me some interviews with the two oldest longstanding members, one Clarence Fountain, who has since passed away, and the second Jimmy Carter, who is still on stage every night the Blind Boys do a show. And he's almost 88. Remarkable man. And we sent interviews by those two guys, my songwriting partner and I, talking about their lives. And from those interviews came the songs. It was almost like a journalism assignment. I just had to find the poetry and stories they were telling and find a way to make them into song. So that's how our relationship started. And it started successfully because one of the songs, Let My Mother Live, was nominated for the Grammy. And we all felt like, well, this is a good thing. We should keep exploring. And we have, and it's been fantastic for me.
So I read you're now an honorary member of the group.
I was made an honorary member. That's right. I got my own Blind Boys of Alabama touring jacket. It's very sweet, especially every night Jimmy introduces me. The older man introduces me as his Hebrew buddy. So he also, when they gave me the jacket, they said, we don't think there's ever been a Hebrew man who's worn the Blind Boys jacket. So I'm honored to be part of their club.
So how many of the Blind Boys are going to be joining you?
There's five altogether, and, you know, unless somebody doesn't feel particularly well on a given night, it's everybody. I have my own band, and we use the same band together. I do a few songs from their catalog, and they do several songs from mine. So I step into their world a bit, and they step into mine. And like I said, the wonderful part of it is that we are singing together for most of the show. I think that's what I would be interested in hearing if I was an audience member. Really, it's a really wonderful show. I don't think I've ever been as happy on stage as when I'm singing with them on my music.
Yeah, well, I had read that they're particular about the songs that they sing. So it's not just spiritual or gospel songs?
Well, no, it essentially what they prefer to sing is gospel music, but they will sing a pop-oriented song if it's not overly sexual or sensual or anything that just doesn't feel intrinsically right to them. And luckily, most of my songs fit the bill. You know, the song about walking in Memphis is about finding inspiration as a stranger in a strange land. And it's really an ode to gospel music itself, to be honest. There's plenty of songs of mine that they felt comfortable singing. You know, there would be a lot of pop songs, especially today, that I just don't think they would dream of touching. They just like to keep it sober.
Yeah. And so what's the reaction been from your fans with that kind of part?
They love it. I mean, you know, if people have been coming to my shows for the last 25 years or so, I've always tried to change it up. I've done lots of special guest shows with great artists like Bonnie Raitt and Michael McDonald. I've shared the stage for evenings with Sean Colvin or Mary Chapin Carpenter. And fans just love it every time you change it up. I do, too. I mean, I love seeing my favorite artists over and over and over again, especially if I think there's going to be something different in each show. So that's the way it is with these shows with the Blind Boys. The response has been fantastic. The Blind Boys fans love it. It's different for them. And my fans love it because it's different for them as well. It's a pairing you wouldn't have expected, and yet somehow, once you hear it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, do you think that this partnership kind of came to be, I mean, as a result of perhaps you becoming a little bit more spiritual, and did it have anything to do with perhaps the tragic accident that you suffered, 14 years ago or so now?
Yeah. No, it was all way more organic and unplanned than that. And it really did start from seeing their interviews and writing songs about them that made me sort of really interested in exploring making music with them beyond that one record that they were in the tail end of making. No, it didn't have anything to do with that. My spiritual life has not changed much. It was really just a way to keep exploring musically and to make the live show different for me, my band, and ultimately the audience.
And this is also part, I think, of a six-stop tour with the Taj Mahal Quartet. What about that partnership? How did that come to be then?
Well, I think that was that Taj was recommended. I think somebody went to Taj and said, you know, the Blind Boys and Marcone are going out on the road. Would you like to be the third act and be part of the co-bill with them? And I'm thrilled that he said yes. He's one of my favorite artists. I've never heard him live, though, but I have 10 or 12 of his records that I've listened to for years and years. I don't know how that's going to end in terms of collaboration. The Blind Boys and Taj made a Christmas record together years ago. So I don't know if they're going to end up doing things together, but I'm not expecting to be collaborating with Taj on any of these shows, but you never know. Unfortunately, it's only about 6 or 7 gigs, like you said, so there isn't a lot of time to plan or practice or rehearse something different. But I'm hoping there will be collaboration, at least with the Blind Boys and Taj. I, as a music fan, love to hear that live.
So what's on your horizon then after the summer touring season?
Well, I'm taking September off, which I usually do. I still have 2 young kids, and I like to be there for the transition from vacation to school when life gets serious and stressful again. And I'm going to try to spend part of that month writing new songs. I have a record company that put out this record, BMG, would like me very much to make my next record of original songs, and I would too. So I'm going to be working on that. And then I'm back on the road in October again. So I'm always trying to balance family life and making new records, new music, and keeping a touring schedule going as well, not only for me, but for my band and for the audience, who I am more grateful for as time goes by.
Okay. Again, Mark Cohn and the Blind Boys of Alabama joining the Taj Mahal Quartet here in Park City at the Park City Eccles Center Tuesday, August 13th. Tickets to the show start at just $49. Tickets and more information at parkcityinstitute.org. We appreciate your time this morning, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Around this time, shadows are tall.